Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
Today is episode 2 in a big county. I'm your host, Jesse Harris. Hosting with me today, we have Jenny Hendricks and Iron County Assessor Cindy Bullock. Our special guest today is Iron County Commissioner Mike Blake. Mike, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
So, I don't think a lot of people understand what exactly a county commissioner does. So, why don't you enlighten us as to what your job is?
That's a great question. County commission, when I entered into the role of county commissioner, I'm not sure I knew what the job was either. I'm not sure I knew what I was getting into. And I find that that's kind of how it is across the board, talking mm-hmm. to other county commissioners. So basically what our county commission role is, we act as both the legislative and kind of the quasi-judicial branch of Iron County.
Executive, you mean?
Executive. What did I say?
Judicial.
Yeah. let me go back. We basically act as the executive branch, not the legislative branch, but the executive branch, and a quasi-judicial role when it comes to making determinations on appeals and things like that, as far as personnel issues and things like that go. The other thing we do, a major responsibility, is overseeing the budget of the county, making sure that we're spending our money where it needs to go and keeping those tax dollars safe. We also really have a hands-on role with the day-to-day operation of the county, involved very closely with the different departments that we oversee.
Okay, what are some of the surprising services the county delivers that people might not expect?
Some of the things that surprised me a little bit, I didn't realize, say the Council on Aging, mm-hmm. our senior center here in Cedar City, and also Meals on Wheels is provided through the county. I don't know what other things. Obviously, we have the county fair that doesn't just automatically pop up and throw a rodeo every year. That's a department that's really a year-round process.
Here, I thought you just planted some rodeo seeds, waited for the monsoon.
No, those things don't just happen accidentally. So there's several things. The county's also involved with the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District, who are their kind of their own entity, but members of that board are appointed by the county commission. Things like that people probably don't think of every day.
Mike, what about collaboration or different agencies that you work with as a commissioner?
So collaboration is probably the most important thing. Important concept of how we are successful as Iron County. We live in a 3,300 square mile area in Iron County that is owned by the county, various municipalities, but also different organizations within the federal government. Bureau of Land Management has a huge amount of land. The National Forest Service has a huge amount of land. And so in order for us to make everything work within the county, we really have to be collaborative with all of those entities, among others.
What are some of the things that you collaborate to do with all of those entities?
Okay. So for instance, let's talk about a kind of a hot topic issue right now is wild horses, mm-hmm. the wild Mustangs on the west desert of Iron County. The majority of that property out there is owned by the Bureau of Land Management. It's federal land controlled by the BLM, but that butts up against private property from farmers and ranchers out in that area. So the numbers are, and this might be a little bit staggering, it was to me, by environmental impact studies, the federal government has determined that we can maintain a healthy herd of about 27,000 horses on the West Desert Range. Currently, we have over 220,000 horses vying for that property.
Wow.
So what there's multiple things that are affected by that. We have the rangeland. Just the it take out all of the other wildlife, everything else. There isn't enough food for the horses if it was just the horses.
Right.
But now the horses are encroaching on the elk territory, the deer population. Not to mention grazing rights and farmers and ranchers who have the right or even own property there. We have to be concerned about the feed. Water is obviously a huge issue. All of those animals need water to survive. And so we need to be able to work with, obviously, the private landowners, but also have to try and mitigate those problems through working through the system with the BLM. That's one example of how we have to collaborate with the different entities in the county.
Right.
Probably my favorite example of collaboration is what's happened down with Canara Falls. I think that is a real model project that should probably be emulated. Can you talk a little bit about how that came together?
You bet. That's a great project that I'm actually really proud of. I was approached shortly after I was elected. I was approached by members of the Canara Town Council and some other members of the community down there who were really concerned about the use of Canara Falls. And what Canara Falls is, it's a very beautiful slot canyon hike that goes up from the east side of Canaraville, follows Canara Creek up, and actually ends up culminating in a couple of waterfalls. It's always been a popular hike, but the word's really gotten out nationally. We have people traveling from all over the United States to make that hike. And what the concern is wear and tear of that canyon. Canaraville Town's water supply originates in that canyon. They have a spring up there. They have facilities for their water. And what we started seeing was, as we get more usage up there, obviously humans, the leave no trace theory did not apply to some of these folks. We ended up with people urinating and defecating in the stream, mounds of toilet paper, Gatorade bottles, just other trash. Even became a problem with feminine hygiene products in the ecosystem. And so that was really the major concern of the residents of Canaraville to protect their stream.
Yeah.
Understandable.
This is a great example. So in order to do anything with trying to control that area, you've got four different entities right off the top that own property. We kind of talked about the BLM. There's another, what we didn't talk about was state level entities, whether that's Department of Natural Resources. What I want to talk about, CITLA. And again, I'm terrible at talking at the acronym, so you're gonna have to remind me of
State and Institutional Trust Lands.
State and Institutional Trust Lands, or CITLA, which benefit all the proceeds from those lands benefit schools, and so they are a very instrumental part and own large pieces of property in Iron County. So this is how it goes: the trailhead, the parking area, is owned by Canaraville Town. The initial road leading up into the canyon is owned by Iron County. Once you get off the road up into the area of the spring, that's owned by the BLM. And then when you get up into the actual falls, that's on CITLA property. So each of those entities has its own ways that they have to go about approval processes, environmental impacts, and everything else that goes along with that. So now we have four government entities that own, have a stake in the game in about that mile and a half or 2 mile hike. This isn't a long hike.
Right.
This is a day hike. Not to mention private citizens. We have a private citizen who owns property at the bottom who's opened a gift shop and parking space. And obviously we need to be cognizant about the rights of those individuals to use their property how they want.
Yeah.
So this process could literally take years to figure out. We sat down initially with Canaraville, CITLA, BLM, Iron County. It was a fairly small working group. Over the course of the next several months, our working group got a little bit bigger, but we were able to, and this is a very long story short, but we were able to come to agreements by the county and the other entities to put in place a reservation system to try and control access into that canyon to make sure that the watershed and everything else are protected. This is not, and I guess maybe on my part, a lot of it was naivety, because we were able to push this through and get it working. I didn't understand all of these other processes at the time, but we were able to come to agreements that didn't sidestep those processes, but it allowed us to take control, and as those processes are going along on the federal level, to work within those confines and still be able to provide that service to Canaribo. It was interesting, we were talking about some of these things, and I was talking with an administrative level individual within the BLM and talking up the Cedar City office, saying, you know, the collaboration was fantastic. You know, we worked through these problems, we identified a problem and we solved it within a year's time. And his comment was, said no one ever about the BLM. And so we're very blessed, very lucky here in Iron County to have the BLM field office that we do, because we do have a great relationship with them, and at least on a local level, they get it and are working to try and make things run as smoothly as possible.
It'd be fantastic to have that replicated in more counties too, as I know that things are a little more tumultuous in other areas.
Yeah, we're really lucky, and I think we have some great people in place that, I mean, we work really well, whether it's on the state, national, or local level. We really have some great people in place here in Iron County.
Yeah. I think that's admirable. That's something that I think you far more often find a very combative relationship rather than one that is so collaborative. And I think that comes from the leadership of our county, you know, being willing to come to the table and not, you know, butt heads with people, but say, let's look for a solution here.
Right, and that's so important, amazing. Because, you know, everybody's frustrated with big government, including me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like the fact that the government seems to have their hands in every aspect of my life. But you know what? The federal government is not going away.
Yeah.
The Bureau of Land Management is not going away. So if we can find ways to work collaboratively with them instead of butting heads and fighting the system all the time, we're going to get so much more accomplished in every aspect.
Yeah. Switching gears just a little bit, I know that we've talked a little bit about some things that you've been able to kind of spearhead at the county and some things that you're really excited about and invested in, and it kind of give us an idea of what you're working on at the county level.
Some of the things, and one of the things that I'm probably most proud of, so I come from a background with Cedar City Corporation. I was a police officer with Cedar City for over 20 years and recently retired from that profession. And so I know what it's like to be the working stiff with local government. I know the frustrations with city administration and the city council, you know, over the years. See, we've had good councils, we've had not so great councils, we've had good mayors, we've had challenging mayors, and I get it. I think that the number one asset that we have in the county are our employees. We cannot, the roads are not going to fix themselves. The jail is not going to staff itself. We have great employees. And as I've come to know many of them personally, that's absolutely the truth. What we were seeing that Iron County turned into a training ground for a lot of bigger agencies because of low wages and things like that, where people would come in, they do a great job for us for 5 or 6 years, and then move on somewhere else where they can make more money.
In all departments.
Whether it be the assessor's office, you know, the assessor's office is kind of a unique thing, because Not anyone can just come in and be an assessor. There's certifications and there's training requirements and education requirements that, you know, those people are hard to come by. We can't just go hire an assessor. Same thing with a police officer. Same thing with a building inspector. There's certain certifications and requirements that come along with those jobs, and they're highly competitive in the personal world right now, in the private sector. So one of the things, you know, we looked at over the years is there's been several attempts over the years to do wage studies or try and figure out a fair way to compensate our employees, and in my opinion those have kind of fallen flat over the years, and because of that Iron County has fallen behind. I worked really hard with the auditor's office. We kind of started out with the sheriff's office and the corrections department because they're the biggest employer. They have the most employees, and there seem to be more discrepancy. I tried to mix disparaging and discrepancies into one word.
Hey, English lets you make up new words.
Right. but there's more of a disparaging wage scale, you know, in that department. So we kind of started where tried to tackle the big things first. As we started looking at that, it became very apparent that it was important that we don't just address law enforcement and the problems that we have there, but we address this countywide. Everybody's important. Unless we can do this countywide, we're not going to do it. We spent a lot of time, found the money within our budget, worked with the other commissioners, with all of the elected officials and the department heads, and we feel that we really came up with a fix to the problem. It wasn't an across-the-board pay raise. You know, everybody gets bumped up. We really took some time and evaluated job descriptions, evaluations, years of service, experience, and feel that we have equaled that playing field really across the board with each individual job description to get them on the right track to make what they deserve.
Well, and not only make what they deserve, but to save the county money in the long run because of the extreme cost to hire and replace people and train them. So if you can keep people in the county, it actually saves taxpayers money than paying to hire.
Exactly. Obviously we want the employees to benefit, but it's my job to look after the county too and look after those tax dollars. We're not going to just go out and throw a bunch of money at the employees to make everybody happy. This had to be something that benefited not only the county but the employees, and I really feel like we've accomplished that at this point. I'm just going to give a real quick example. For the sheriff's department to come in and hire a brand new rookie off the street with no prior experience, the cost of training that rookie from hire date to independence out on their own on patrol is over $10,000, and that's real money. That's equipment, that's training, that's food money while they're going away to the academy. That's real dollars. We've implemented a recruiting system to try and recruit more experienced employees. If we can hire a more experienced law enforcement officer that's already certified, that's a savings of over $6,000 to the county.
Wow.
Just in real money.
Yeah.
And so that's part of that recruiting and retention program that we took on.
That's
so
fantastic.
So there's measurable results in savings.
I know you've given a lot of credit to the HR at the county too. He's been really working hard on that.
Yes. Adrian Walker is a rock star in my opinion. He's one of those guys that can look at pivot tables and spreadsheets and work the formulas and they make sense. I can write a heck of an English paper or spout history, but when it comes to numbers and math, that is not my strong point. So, and that's important. I'm glad that you brought Adrian up in this conversation because, as a commissioner, I am not the sole leader. Neither are the other two commissioners. We do not like carry the flag and through the county as the leaders of the county. We have to surround ourselves with those people. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to have resources, because I do not have all the answers nor pretend to.
That brings me to the next topic, and I will introduce that, and then I have to actually leave, so I apologize to you all, but we're talking about changes that are going to happen after the first of the year. We're going to have three or four newly elected officials. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you think that change might look like, or what that's going to be?
Yes. So I think this is an exciting time for Iron County. I think that any time that some new blood gets interjected into the system, it's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So we have a new commission seat. Commissioner Brinkerhoff is stepping down after many years of service and appreciated service and expertise. That's going to be big shoes to fill in that department. We have Commissioner Cousins coming on board after the first of the year, you know, who will bring a new perspective. We also have a new sheriff coming in. Sheriff Gower has opted to retire. We have newly elected Sheriff Ken Carpenter coming in after the first of the year. Ken has a wealth of experience in law enforcement and is a fantastic leader, and we look forward to working with him. And then we have Chad Dotson at the Iron County Attorney's Office taking over the reins there, and we look forward to those changes. I think that anytime that you have new people in this collaborative group, we're going to move forward,
sure,
take it to the next level. The other position is the Iron County Recorder.
Yeah.
Debbie Johnson is retiring at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. She announced her retirement after the election. And so that's going to be a little bit different process, and we're not sure who the new county recorder is going to be at this point.
Talk to us a little bit about what that process is going to look like, because it's different than, you know, a regular election.
It is. This is a little confusing, and I'm going to try and make it as simple as I can. Within the Republican Party, so county politics is partisan. It's Democrat, Republican, whatever else.
We're in Iron County, just most.
We're in Iron County. We're the majority of Republicans.
Yeah.
So Debbie's a Republican, and so the choosing of a new county recorder is going to come down to a function within the Republican Party of Iron County, which is called the Central Committee. The Central Committee is composed of the leadership of the Republican Party, who are voted in within the party. All of the elected officials in the county sit on that committee as well as the precinct chairs and vice chairs. Mm-hmm. For all of the precincts, you know, when you go to your caucus meetings, that's your precinct and your chair and vice chair from your caucus meeting area sit on that committee. People apply for that job and then are screened by that central committee and ultimately voted on by the central committee. So it's not a general election, but those people are voted on by the people that you chose to represent your precinct.
Mm-hmm. I think that's coming up at the end of this month, the end of October.
I want to say the 25th.
I believe it's October 25th.
Yeah.
And we'll try and have Debbie on to talk about her role and what she does. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah,
that would be helpful.
So if you have a dog in the fight, now's a good time to reach out to your precinct chair and say, hey, I have an opinion on people.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well put.
You know, one of the things I know you're working on right now is the new budget.
Yes.
And that's something that is not glamorous, but something that does affect our community and everybody as taxpayers. So can you kind of talk us through what that process is? What does that look like?
So the budget process is fairly brutal, especially to the commissioners and the auditor.
Yeah. Everybody wants a piece of the money, and there's never enough pieces.
Everybody wants a piece of the pie. We have about roughly a $40 million budget to run Iron County. So what that is, prior to now, and all of the budget and the finances funneled through the auditor's office. So the auditor has called for budget requests, and there's small items, there's capital items, there's personnel requests, you know, anything from office supplies to a new truck. And every penny has to be accounted for through this process. So what this is going to look like, our department heads have put together their budget requests and their tentative budgets for the next year and submitted those into the auditor's office. Starting next Monday, we as the commission and the auditor will sit down with each and every department head and go through their budget item by item by item by item by item.
How many paper clips do you need this year? Yeah.
Literally. And that process is going to take days.
Yeah.
That's a process where we sit down and we look at every request. We look at and we compare that to past budgets. We look at, you know, maybe if there's any areas that you went over budget this year, do we reasonably need to raise the budget amount for that item? Mm-hmm. Or did we budget too much last year and you have an excess, so maybe we don't need to budget for that this year? And we'll sit down with every department in the county and anybody who receives county funds. We'll go through that process. Once we have a general idea, or we have a good idea, I guess, of what that budget is going to look like, ultimately that budget has to be passed in open meetings. That has to be very well organized, it's always pretty well organized. It needs to be
publicized.
Thank you. Advertised is the word I'm looking for. And that'll take place in a county commission meeting, most likely the last commission meeting of November or the first commission meeting of December. We only have one commission meeting in December, where that will, and that proposed budget has to be on display to the community. You have an opportunity to look through that and provide any input. But so that budget process has actually been going for several weeks. The first time we sit down and look at it as a commission, we'll start Monday. And that's kind of the budget process.
You know, one of the things that I learned recently that was really striking to me, and I'm posing this as a question because I haven't confirmed this myself, but my understanding is that Iron County is debt-free, and that the $40 million or and change that you're talking about is actually money that has been collected. It's not something that we're planning on receiving from future revenues.
Right.
It's money that we have as a county, and so we're just basically dividing that up, and I think that's unique.
We're in a really unique circumstance. We were able to pay off all of our debt service this year. For instance, we did a major remodel on the Iron County Courthouse. We basically gutted it and rebuilt the inside. It stood there since 1974. It was full of asbestos. And when we got into the electrical system, it was not grounded.
Oh, no.
What could go wrong with that? You know, back in the day, they may have plugged in an electric typewriter and a coffee pot.
Right.
Now we have banks of computers and servers and everything else. Overall, you know, our borrowed money, our bond on that was over $800,000. Additionally, we sunk tens of thousands of dollars in incidentals. We had to fix the elevator. Mm-hmm. That cost us a ton of money, but in order to be compliant, we have to have an elevator.
Sure.
Yeah.
We were able to, because of conservative management of the budget over the years, we had the money to pay that debt service off. You know, we don't owe a dime to anyone. The only debt service that we do have, we built the new justice building this year that houses the highway patrol, dispatch, driver's license, those type of things. We do still have a bond on that, but our monthly rent income from that building exceeds what our bond payment is.
Wow.
And that's guaranteed income from the, you know, the state of Utah is who we're renting that space
right.
to. And contractually, that's a guaranteed income over the next 25 years.
That's fantastic.
And so there's no money out of the general fund going towards paying for that building.
That's great.
What kind of revenue sources does the county work with?
I don't know.
Whatever, he just deals with whatever Dan tells you there.
So obviously, we have property tax.
Mm-hmm.
We collect a portion of sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
We collect restaurant tax.
Mm-hmm.
We collect transient room tax. We get some federal money. And this is where it gets confusing, but we talk about PILT, payment in lieu of taxes. That's
mm-hmm.
that's money that we get from the federal government because they have a lot of our lands tied up that we can't use for industry or tax.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of different income streams into the county. Luckily, I'm going to toot the horn of our auditor, Dan Jessen, because he has his finger on every dime of that. And shares that with me and the other commissioners daily. I mean, we really have a good idea of what we have coming in and what we have going out,
mm-hmm.
really on a day-to-day basis.
That's great. We appreciate your time today. Really grateful that you were able to come in and kind of talk through some of this stuff that's really important to our community. Is there anything else that you want to share, you know, with Iron County, everybody who's going to be listening or watching?
Gosh, Iron County is a fantastic place to be right now. We really are unrivaled with our community participation, our volunteership. We have some really neat things going on. We have a very strong economic development
mm-hmm.
move. We have a very well-organized economic development department and committee who is really committed to bring in more business and the kind of business that's going to provide a great income for our folks
mm-hmm.
And going to be very contributory to the area. We have a tourism office mm-hmm. who works incredibly hard to market what we have and to capitalize so that, you know, we reap the benefits of that. I can't say enough about our street department, our sheriff's office, I'm going to miss people, they're going to be mad, but, I mean, our garbage dump
yeah.
runs fantastically. Our Council on Aging is supplying meals on wheels to folks that would have problems with nutrition, you know, in their later years. The thing that I'm most proud of is my relationship with the individuals within our county. The people in the neighborhoods, I get calls all the time to talk about neighborhood problems, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I may not have the answer, but I sure know where the resources are mm-hmm. to answer some of those questions. I'm really proud of our relationship on the state level. I'm really proud of our relationship, my relationship particular with the governor's office, with the Bureau of Land Management, with our representatives of both state and local, or state and national. Great relationships with Senator Vickers. I've had a great relationship with Representative Westwood that's been really beneficial, and look forward to working with whoever takes that spot. I have good relationships with Senator Lee, Senator Hatch, Congressman Stewart, Congressman Bishop. These are all people that we've gotten to know on a very personal basis and have the ability to reach out. You know, when we have a pressing national issue, it's a little bit baffling for me. You know, I'm just a little Cedar City kid. Came out of the west side of Cedar City, out of the Willows over there, and have a direct line to Congressman Stewart.
Yeah.
You know, and have a relationship to when I call, he knows who I am, and he understands, you know, I'm at a loss for words. I'm rambling now.
One of the things that I have seen is that I think to a person, our current contingency, whether you're talking about county or state or federal, are really invested in the success of our community and Iron County. And it's a tremendous benefit.
It is.
To our residents and to our voters and citizens.
It is. And, you know, I always kind of looked at, from a distance, you think Washington. Those guys are so far removed, they have no clue. They have a clue.
Yeah.
They really do care about what's going on within our area. One really kind of neat piece of collaboration that just took place last week, Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke came here. He came here to do some work with the national parks, but he requested a personal meeting with the county commission. And we had the opportunity to sit down with Secretary Zinke and talk one-on-one in a very personal way of how the policies of the Department of the Interior are affecting the lives of citizens of Iron County. That was cool.
That's very
cool. Yeah.
That guy has the ear of the president.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those relationships that, as we cultivate those, we're really going to be able to move forward. And I'm going to say, with this current, with our current presidential administration, we're seeing some fantastic movement in the right direction with our public lands, mm-hmm. with things like that. The president has surrounded himself with great people like Mr. Zinke, and others that are really have the concerns of the West and the concerns of rural America in their sights, and it's fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I want to close out with a moment of entertainment. I want you to think about your funniest story as an elected official. Think of it as something that could easily be a scene from Parks and Rec.
But don't name anything.
Okay.
Don't want you to torch anyone. You don't need to throw anyone under the bus.
That's funny that you throw that reference out, because this morning I was flipping channels and I landed on Parks and Rec. And in that edition, there was a parade. And I don't remember her name, the lady on
Leslie
Parks
Nope.
and Rec. She was under fire for some of her policies. And she thought, I'm going to watch the parade. I'm going to take my mind off everything. Well, one of the floats in the parade was dedicated to recalling her election. So nobody's formed to recall my election. But this is something that nobody knows that the county is involved in, and that is the Christmas holiday cavalcade parade. The county commission actually sponsors one of the floats.
Okay.
And so we pay the parade, which is a nonprofit organization, we pay for the right to be involved in the parade. And it's the old woman in the shoe float. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it.
I did not know that.
But the old woman in the shoe float is like a two-story big shoe and underneath it there's a car underneath the float. Now, when I say a car, I use that term really loosely. So last year, I was contacted by them, and they said, "Your contract's up. We want more money." So okay, I know nothing about this. I called, and they said, "Oh yeah, we donate. You know, that's a good cause." So then the next thing was, and lucky, you get to drive the float. And so I thought, well, how bad could this be? Well, let me tell you. There is a car chassis from circa the 1960s or 70s in this float. The seat is corroded it doesn't even look like a seat anymore. There's a bare engine, a V8. Like a Chevy 350, or I'm not an engine guy, but and it sits right in front of you, belching blue smoke. the only way to see out of this float is to look past the engine, past all of the carbon monoxide, and out a little slit in the front. So literally your view is a couple of inches. I drove that float from the buildings where it's stored up to the start of the parade. And took my life into my own hands to do that. So when it came time for the parade, I literally recruited three friends to ride in there with me to look out the sides to tell me if I was going to run over any kids. Because right. You're literally just driving a two-story, 20-foot-long shoe down the middle of Main Street with children running out to get the candy. I don't know who did this, but this year I'm going to get stuck with it again. I'm not even going to try and pawn it off. I've already been in the process of making sure they get their funds for this year. But they put a group of clowns walking in front of us, throwing candy.
Oh, dear.
So the children were literally under our shoe. I had to have people hanging out the side windows of the shoe, like slapping children out of the way so we didn't run them over. If you could have heard the amount of cussing that was coming out of the inside of that shoe while going down Main Street, in my wildest dreams, you know, I've done some really cool things in the commission. I got invited to the White House a few months ago. I met with the Vice President of the United States. I've had some wonderful experiences. I never would have guessed I'd be inside the old woman in the shoe.
Well, I gotta tell you, that puts the storybook cavalcade in an entirely different light for me.
So I welcome you. If you want the experience to ride in the shoe, it does come with an old lady mask to be the old woman in the shoe. We do need volunteers. And then children, if you have any children that you don't care if they get carbon monoxide in a little bit to ride in the float, because the float literally has two floors that there's kids above you hanging out the windows of this shoe.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Great.
So that's the most surprising and the funniest thing.
That's great. Well, that's coming up here in what, about 6 or 8 weeks?
It's not far enough.
Yeah.
Well, anyone who's watching is going to have a new appreciation for it now of what goes in.
I want whoever wants to come stick their head in the float and get a taste of the glamour of the Iron County Commission, I welcome you.
Well, you heard it here first.
That's fantastic.
That's a behind-the-scenes look.
I love it.
At the commission.
Mike, thanks for coming in. We sure appreciate your time and sharing all your knowledge and background and history. It's really, really cool to be able to hear from our elected officials. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks so much. Pardon me for a moment here, working on the audio.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.